So if you want to build a laser big enough to, mimic the core of a star, your biggest enemy isn't actually the light itself.
No, not at all.
It's the laws of thermodynamics literally melting your machine down into plasma.
Yeah, which is, it's a wild thing to think about.
Right. Because, I mean, we are all used to thinking of a laser as just amplified light, like a neat localized beam that can scan your groceries or weld steel or carry fiber optic data.
Sure, the functional stuff.
Exactly. But the theoretical framework we are unpacking in today's deep dive, well, it completely shatters that definition.
It really does. It flips the whole paradigm.
It does. We are going to recast the laser, basically, not as a light source, but as this engine of inverse entropy.
Right.
And to do that, we have to take one of the most famous physics experiments in history, the double slit experiment, and flip it entirely on its head.
Which is such a cool way to look at it.
It is. And then for our mission today, we are going to push that physics to the absolute extreme. We want to find the actual thermodynamic ceiling of how big a laser can get before reality just outright breaks the machine.
Yeah, because it does break. And to understand why, you have to you really have to shift how you visualize probability.
Okay, lay it on us.
Well, you have to strip away the functional use of the laser. Forget the barcode
You were
scanners.
right. Forget the pointer.
Right. You have to look at the statistical mechanics operating underneath. The boundary of a laser isn't defined by, electromagnetism. It's strictly defined by the physics of the physical reality trying to contain it.
Okay, so let's get straight into that inversion because this blew my mind in the source material.
Yeah, the conditional collapse theory.
Yes, the conditional collapse theory framework. So this framework argues that the classic double slit experiment is basically forward entropy expansion, but the laser's doing the exact opposite. Can you unpack the mechanics of that for us?
Yeah, absolutely. So think about the starting conditions of the double slit experiment from school. You have a single, highly coherent source of light.
Right, like a neat little beam.
Exactly. And you send that light through an aperture with two slits, and that single source splits. The probability of where a photon will land, it spreads out.
It makes those fringes, right?
Right. It creates a complex, distributed fringe pattern of light and dark bands on the wall or the detector.
Okay.
So, in quantum mechanical terms, you're taking a single photon state and expanding it into a superposition of multiple potential paths.
It's spreading out.
Yes.
Okay.
The probability spreads across space.
Yeah.
That is forward entropy. It's an expansion of possibilities. It's an increase in spatial disorder.
Okay, so you are moving from one predictable source to many probabilistic outcomes.
Yeah.
So it's like, and the source had this great analogy. It's like a spray paint can, it's blasting paint
That's a
everywhere.
perfect way to visualize it.
But then, if the double slit is forward entropy going from one defined state to many, then the laser is inverse entropy collapse.
Yes.
So it's like magically sucking all that scattered paint back into a single, perfectly straight line.
Basically, yeah, because a laser does not begin with a clean single beam.
It doesn't.
No, it begins with a chaotic, high entropy mess. You have millions or, billions of atoms inside a game medium.
Like a gas or a crystal.
Right, a gas, crystal, doped fiber, or whatever. And when you pump energy into that medium, those atoms become excited.
Okay.
And left to their own devices, they just want to release photons completely randomly,
Just firing off wherever.
firing off in every possible direction with different phases at different times. It's an innumerable number of incoherent sources.
So they're all just yelling at once, like a noisy room of people talking over each other.
Yes, you are actively fighting the Boltzmann distribution. Normally, an atomic population prefers to just sit in a low-energy thermal equilibrium, just quiet.
Right.
But to get a laser to work, you have to force an artificial population inversion. You have to push more atoms into an excited state than the ground state.
Which takes a lot of energy, I'd imagine.
An immense influx of energy. That energy is the foundational boundary condition. It sets the stage for the inversion.
Got it.
But just having a bunch of excited atoms isn't enough, right? You need an architectural mechanism to force the collapse.
To suck the paint back in.
Right. In the double slit, the physical aperture splits the beam. But in a laser, the optical cavity, the mirrors at either end of the crystal, they act as an inverse aperture.
Oh, interesting.
They filter out all the random chaotic emissions. If an atom emits a photon at an angle, it just hits the side of the cavity and is lost forever.
Okay, so the only ones that survive are the ones going perfectly straight.
Exactly. the ones traveling perfectly back and forth along the central axis of the cavity.
But wait, filtering alone just gives you a narrow beam of random photons, right? Like, it doesn't give you the synchronization. It doesn't make them act like that synchronized choir we talked about.
Right, and that's where stimulated emission comes in.
Okay. The conditional collapse.
Exactly. Stimulated emission is the conditional collapse operator. When one of those perfectly aligned photons passes by an excited atom, it interacts with the atom's electron cloud.
And forces it to drop.
Yes, it triggers it to drop to a lower energy state. And crucially, the photon it emits is an exact clone of the first one.
Oh, wow.
Same phase, same frequency, same direction.
But hold on, if stimulated emission just clones the photon, why doesn't that clone photon just trigger another clone that veers off in a slightly wrong direction? What forces the absolute alignment?
Well, it comes down to the geometry of the cavity combined with the phase matching constraint. Because the mirrors only continuously reflect photons perfectly parallel to the axis, those are the only ones that get to make multiple passes.
They're the only ones that stay in the game.
Exactly. They're the only ones that achieve exponential growth. Any off-axis cloning is quickly just geometry filtered out of the system.
So instead of a spatial pattern of scattered fringes like on the wall in the double slit, the laser establishes absolute temporal coherence.
Yes, temporal coherence. All those random probabilities collapse into one single sustained outcome. The coherent beam, the choir singing in perfect harmony.
That is just... it's such a wild way to think about it. So it violently squeezes this chaotic potential into intense agreement.
Violently is a good word for it.
Well, that leads me to a really naive question, but I think it's crucial here.
Sure, go for it.
So light doesn't have mass, right? Photons are bosons. They don't take up space in a traditional way.
Right. Multiple photons can occupy the exact same quantum state.
Right. So why can't we just endlessly scale that cavity? If light doesn't take up space, why can't we just keep adding more mirrors, pumping in more electricity, and basically building an infinitely powerful Death Star laser? What is physically stopping us?
Well, you'd think we could, right? But the limit is not the physics of the light itself.
It's not.
No, the limit is the physical structure holding the light. To understand that ceiling, you really have to look at the behemoths the physics community has already built.
Like the National Ignition Facility, the
right.
MIF.
Yes, the NIF. In the United States.
I mean, the scale of that thing is just immense. It's essentially the size of a sports stadium.
It is massive. It utilizes 192 separate laser beams, all perfectly synchronized, to deliver 500 terawatts of peak power.
500 terawatts.
Yeah, to put that in perspective, 500 terawatts is significantly more power than the entire electrical grid of the Earth generates at any given moment.
Wait, really? The whole Earth?
The whole planet. But, you know, the NIF sustains that power for just a tiny fraction of a billionth of a second.
Oh, okay. So it's very short burst.
Right. Delivering about 2.2 megajoules of energy onto a target the size of a peppercorn.
All to trigger nuclear fusion.
Exactly.
And there are systems pushing even higher peak powers, just for shorter durations, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like the source mentioned facilities like the ELI L4 Aton in the Czech Republic and the ELI MP in Romania, they operate in the 10 petawatt regime.
10 quadrillion watts.
10 quadrillion watts. And then conversely, you have high power continuous wave fiber lasers, the ones used for industrial metal welding. They run endlessly at like 10 to 20 kilowatts.
Yeah, but look at the operational constraints on those extreme systems.
Yeah.
The NIF can only fire its beams roughly once every 3 to 7 hours.
Hours? Just to fire again for a billionth of a second.
Yeah. And those petawatt lasers, they pulse for mere femtoseconds. You hit these hard stationary boundaries because you are trying to contain an extreme density of electromagnetic energy.
So the machine just gives out.
Literally. The primary physical ceiling is what we call the laser-induced damage threshold, or LIDT.
Okay, LIDT.
The mirrors, the lenses, the dielectric coatings, the stationary structure of the laser itself will physically fracture or melt.
Let's mechanize why that fracture happens, because it's not just that the light is hot, right? The source specifically highlighted the Kerr effect. The light actually alters the glass itself.
Yeah, the Kerr effect is a fascinating demonstration of extreme physics. I mean, we usually think of a lens as having a fixed refractive index. Light bends a specific amount when it enters the glass, right?
Right, like glasses on your face. It's a static piece of glass.
Exactly. But when the electric field of the laser beam becomes sufficiently intense, it literally distorts the electron clouds of the atoms inside the glass.
Whoa.
It pulls and stretches the atomic structure in real time.
And that distortion changes the refractive index dynamically. Like, as the light is passing through.
Precisely. The refracted index becomes dependent on the intensity of the light. And because a laser beam is typically most intense in the dead center and weaker at the edges, the center of the beam experiences a higher refractive index.
So the middle is bending light differently than the outside.
Right. So the glass itself effectively turns into an additional highly powerful converging lens.
Oh, no. So it's a runaway feedback loop.
Exactly.
The beam creates a lens which focuses the beam tighter, which intensifies the electric field further, which makes the lens even stronger.
Until the beam collapses into a microscopic singularity.
A singularity inside the glass.
Yeah, it becomes a tiny filament of unimaginable intensity. And at that point, the electric field is so strong, it completely rips the electrons away from their nuclei.
It ionizes the material.
It creates a microscopic pocket of plasma. The glass just shatters from the inside out.
That is terrifying for anyone trying to build one of these. And even if you avoid that, even if you manage to avoid the catastrophic Kerr effect plasma fracture, you still have to deal with thermal lensing, right?
Oh, thermal lensing is unavoidable.
And that works on a similar principle, but it's driven by heat rather than the electric field.
Yeah. As the laser medium absorbs pump energy, it inevitably heats up. And because the cooling usually happens at the outer edges of the crystal, you get a steep temperature gradient.
The core is blazing hot and the edges cool.
Right. And heat changes the physical density of the material, which again changes the speed of light traveling through it.
So instead of the electric field creating a converging lens that crushes the beam, the heat gradient creates a diverging lens that tears the beam apart.
Yes. The synchronized coherence you just spent all that energy building is suddenly moving at different speeds depending on where it is in the medium.
The choir is suddenly all singing at different tempos.
Perfect analogy.
Mm-hmm.
The wavefront distorts, the periodicity is destroyed, and the beam scatters.
Which brings up the core tension of this whole thing and something I was really stuck on. Why is there so much heat in the first place?
The thermodynamic tax.
Right, because if the goal is just to excite an atom and have it emit a photon, where is this massive thermal nightmare actually coming from?
Well, this connects directly back to the idea of the laser as an inverse entropy machine.
Hmm.
You are taking high entropy chaos and forcing it into low entropy order.
Which nature hates.
The second law of thermodynamics strictly dictates that you cannot decrease entropy in an isolated local system without an equal or greater increase in entropy somewhere else.
So the heat is the universe balancing the equation.
The heat is the tax. When you pump energy into the system to force that population inversion, a massive percentage of that energy simply cannot be converted into coherent light. The heat represents the uncollapsed probability.
Wow.
It is all the energetic potential that failed to align with the singular coherent state.
The efficiency statistics on this are just sobering. Like, if you look at the NIF again, out of the over 300 megajoules of electrical energy pumped into the system from the wall.
Yeah, guess how much useful light comes out?
It's about 2 megajoules of useful ultraviolet laser light.
Right.
Meaning roughly 298 megajoules of energy is instantly converted into waste heat with every single shot.
It's crazy.
That is an efficiency of about 0.7%.
And the kicker is, you cannot engineer your way out of that tax completely because it exists down at the quantum level.
Right. The Thirst talked about quantum defect heat. What is that?
So even in the most efficient modern systems, like fiber lasers, you face a strict physical discrepancy.
Mm-hmm.
To pump an atom into an excited state, you have to use a photon that carries slightly more energy than the photon you want the atom to eventually emit for your laser beam.
Wait, why?
Because the atom has to drop to an intermediate energy band before it can undergo stimulated emission.
Oh, I see. So there's a gap.
Exactly. And that tiny gap in energy between the absorbed pump photon and the emitted laser photon, sometimes it's just 5 or 10% of the total energy. Well, it cannot just vanish. Energy has to go somewhere.
So where does it go?
It is released as a phonon.
Okay, let's clarify the phonon because that is the actual mechanism of the heat, right? It's not a particle of light.
No, a phonon is a quantized mode of physical vibration. It is an acoustic wave at the atomic scale.
So the atom physically shakes.
Yes. The subatomic energy mismatch translates directly into a physical vibration of the glass or crystal lattice. The atoms physically shake. Now, multiply that single subatomic vibration by the quadrillions of photons being generated.
Oh, man.
And that microscopic lattice vibration manifests as massive bulk heat in the material.
Which brings us to the math. because the source mentioned that these mathematical models rely on ordinary differential equations, or ODEs, and they call the laser a limit cycle balancing on a tightrope. So is the system constantly fighting to stay coherent while the heat is literally trying to push it back into chaos?
That's exactly it. A limit cycle basically represents a state of dynamic equilibrium. The laser is operating stably, but only conditionally. You continuously pump in energy, the coherent photon field is maintained, but that chaotic thermal field is growing simultaneously.
You're walking the tightrope.
And you fall off by bifurcation.
Bifurcation.
Yeah, it doesn't fail gradually. The laser doesn't just slowly dim as it gets hotter. It's a sudden, catastrophic shift in the system's dynamics.
Oh, so it just snaps.
Right. If the thermal field exceeds the damage threshold, or that thermal lensing threshold we talked about, the equilibrium is destroyed instantly. 1 millisecond, you have a perfect fundamental beam. The next millisecond, the steep thermal gradient causes transverse mode instability.
Meaning the cavity can no longer force the light into just one single path.
Exactly. The heat alters the refractive index so severely that higher order chaotic paths suddenly become viable within the cavity.
And the beam just splinters.
It splinters. The energy disperses, spatial coherence is lost, and the beam profile just becomes a flickering mess. The coherent limit cycle has collapsed back into thermal chaos.
Okay, so knowing all of this, knowing this massive, mathematically unavoidable thermal tax exists, it completely reframes what it would actually take to push past today's physical limits.
Oh, totally.
Because the theoretical models mapped out a hypothetical scenario, right? Scaling the architecture of the NIF up by a factor of 10 to create a 20 megajoule laser.
Right, the 10x scenario. And when you map that out, you realize you aren't just scaling the optics. You are scaling the thermodynamic debt.
The tax bill gets bigger.
Way bigger. To deliver a 20 megajoule beam, factoring in that sub 1% efficiency, you would require roughly 3 gigajoules of electrical input.
Which means you are generating 2.98 gigajoules of waste heat inside the facility in a matter of nanoseconds.
Yep. And currently, the NEF requires, 3 to 7 hours to passively cool down.
Just to let the optics settle back to normal.
Right. But with a 10X system, passive cooling would take days.
Days between shots.
Yeah. To actively cool a system of that scale and allow it to fire with any practical frequency, you move completely out of the realm of laser physics and into massive heavy industry.
You're building a power plant at that point.
Literally. You would require a continuous active cooling infrastructure on par with a commercial power plant. We're talking 120 to 400 megawatts of continuous cooling capacity.
That's insane.
Massive heat exchangers, industrial chilling towers. Even to scale up a 10 petawatt system to fire continuously at 10 hertz, so just 10 times a second, you would need meter scale dielectric gratings plumbed with constant high pressure water flow.
Just to prevent the gold coatings and the glass from vaporizing.
Exactly. Just to keep the machine from melting itself into slag.
So synthesizing all this, to build a bigger laser, you aren't really advancing optical physics. The theoretical ceiling isn't an optical problem at all. You are basically building a gigantic industrial heat engine that just happens to occasionally shoot out light.
That is the ultimate conclusion of the conditional collapse theory. The laser effect is entirely conditional. It only persists as long as the heat can be extracted faster than the photons can generate it.
Wow.
You can only maintain the coherent state if you can afford to pay the continuous thermal bill. The threshold of laser technology is, at its core, the thermodynamic threshold of managing chaos.
Which gives us such a profoundly different perspective on this technology. I mean, we set out today to redefine the laser. It isn't just amplified light. It is an inverted double-slit experiment.
Right.
It's a machine designed to take a chaotic, high-entropy distribution of probability and forcefully collapse it into a single, localized line of perfect temporal coherence.
Sticking the paint back into the can.
Sucking the paint back into the can. But the universe demands a strict energy tax for creating that perfect order. And that tax is paid in lattice vibrations, thermal lensing, and plasma fractures. Managing that heat is the hard physical boundary stopping us from scaling lasers endlessly.
It is. It reveals that whenever you see a laser, you are basically looking at a localized defeat of entropy.
A localized defeat of entropy. I love that.
It is a highly unnatural state that requires constant aggressive intervention to maintain.
It is a thermodynamic miracle playing out in the barcode scanner at the grocery store.
Exactly.
Next time you use a simple laser pointer or, read a headline about fusion ignition, you'll know that tiny beam of light is actually a thermodynamic miracle. You are essentially holding an entropy pump.
And, that naturally extends to a much broader principle of physics, right?
Yeah.
If you think about complex systems.
Well, where are you going with this?
Well, think about it. If a laser is ultimately just a structural framework that consumes massive amounts of energy to temporarily reverse entropy, forcing perfect order out of a chaotic environment while dumping waste heat into its surroundings.
Yeah.
It forces you to look at other complex systems playing by the exact same rules.
Like what?
Well, are there other complex systems in the universe, perhaps even biological life itself, that are fundamentally doing the exact same thing?
Oh, man. Biological life operates on that exact same thermodynamic premise.
It does. A living biological cell takes in energy, forces highly ordered molecular structures out of a chaotic chemical soup, fights the Boltzmann distribution to maintain its internal state, and radiates waste heat to survive.
That is uncanny.
Right. In the grand scheme of statistical mechanics, the laser on your desk and the biological life in your body are navigating the exact same thermodynamic tightrope. Both only exist through a conditional collapse, and both only survive as long as they can manage the heat.
Order extracted from chaos, paid for in thermal debt.
Precisely.
Well, that is a mic drop if I've ever heard one. We will leave you, the listener, to ponder that overlap between the physics of light and the mechanics of life. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and we'll catch you next time.